I have Plant on the Line. This is the commentary.ca. On the 9th of July, 2005, Chuck Cadman died at the age of 57. He had been first elected to the House of Commons in 1997, a Reform Party MP following many years in the public eye following his son Jesse's tragic murder in 1992. In 2004, Cadman lost the Conservative Party nomination in his riding of Surrey North, but decided to run as an independent in that year's election, winning the seat. The Liberal majority was reduced, and Cadman literally held the fate of Parliament in his hands. Like a Rock, the Chuck Cadman story is a new book from Harbour Publishing. It tells the story of Cadman's life and his advocacy for stricter treatment of violent offenders. The book has gotten a great deal of press as to its contents regarding a meeting between Conservative Party officials and Cadman shortly before a confidence vote in Parliament. What was said at the meeting in question, what was offered and so forth has been the subject of much discussion and even a lawsuit between the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition. The author of Like a Rock joins me now. Tom Zatarek is a staff reporter at the Now Regional newspaper serving Surrey, White Rock and North Delta. He's won numerous awards for his work, including the Suburban Newspapers of America Award for Best Election Coverage. Like a Rock retails for $26.95 with a foreword by former Prime Minister Paul Martin. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Tom Zatarek. Good morning, Mr. Zatarek.
Hello, Joe. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us. When did you first meet Chuck Cadman?
I met him in the basement of the Johnson Heights Evangelical Free Church in October of 1992. He was cradling his son's soccer ball. They just had just finished his funeral, and this was the reception. I was already a reporter for a few years. But still pretty much a rookie kind of reporter, and I went up to him and asked him, you know, sorry to bother you and all this, but my paper's going to deadline and I need a photograph of Jesse, and he was very happy to help me, and that's what really struck me right away with Chuck was how he had time for everybody.
The murder of Jesse in 1992—that was big news in the Surrey area, in the Lower Mainland.
Yes.
What exactly happened?
Well, Jesse and a couple of his buddies had gone out to a party in a rodeo town of Cloverdale, not I guess about 20 minutes away from where the cabins live, and the party didn't pan out, so they ended up coming back and running into this group of young toughs, I guess, who were looking to, you know, just make people's lives miserable that night, I suppose. They got jumped by these guys and off of Fraser Highway in Surrey there, and the fellow who stabbed Jesse, who was 16 at the time, this guy was also 16. He was on a curfew, a court order curfew on another charge. This, of course, when it came out in court, was what got Chuck really upset about the Young Offenders Act, because had he abided by that curfew, this wouldn't have happened.
He had no inclination to politics heretofore, correct?
That's right. That's right. He's just your basic suburban kind of guy. He helped coach soccer with his son. His son was a goalkeeper with they were called the Surrey Scorpions, and he enjoyed playing his guitar. He was a musician in the '60s and throughout the '70s. Was also into his computers and things like that, and playing recreational hockey. But, you know, basically the kind of guy who'd come home from work and sit down in front of the TV for a few hours. Just no political aspirations whatsoever.
And it was because of his I guess, disgust at the criminal justice system at the time that led him into politics?
Yes. Shortly after, I guess it was several months after Jesse had died, they started up this, he and his wife Donna and some other friends, kind of like a little core group of friends, had started up an organization called Crime Ottawa, lobbying the government, and they'd have kiosks all around BC and everything. Chuck did a lot of media. But I guess they came to the point where they figured that they'd gone as far as they could go, and Randy White, who was kind of like the crime and justice guy for the Reform Party at the time, approached Chuck to run for Surrey North as their candidate in 1997. And like I said, he figured that, well, I can't do much more as a lobbyist. Maybe I can affect greater change from the inside. And this is kind of interesting about Chuck, really, is that, like we were just discussing, Joe, he had no political aspirations whatsoever, but just thrown into this situation as a grieving dad and deciding that, you know, there had to be a reckoning here, and laws had to be improved. Here you have a Westerner who goes to Ottawa, and he's part of a small opposition, a regional opposition, really, Reform Party, and manages to get some of his ideas passed a majority Liberal government that's basically Central Canada focused. It's really quite an achievement that he managed to do that.
And he wasn't,
considering he's by no means a career politician at all, right?
And he was a good MP, was he not?
Yeah, he was very well loved out here. He was like, I mentioned in my book, he was greeted like a rock star in local shopping malls and stuff like that. People loved to run into him at the rodeo, and he was a guy who didn't like that kind of baby-kissing, glad-handing kind of politics, but he really was happy to just be with people on kind of like a real level, you know? And then people recognize that, and they kind of give him a shot in the arm and tell him, you know, hey, Chuck, go give him hell for us or whatever in Ottawa. And he was just a real man of the people, I guess, a grassroots kind of guy. People didn't really look at him as a politician, but, you know, per se, but more like their guy, you know, their representative.
He lost the nomination for the Conservatives in, I guess that was before the 2004 election.
Uh-huh.
That was not a slight on his popularity at all. That was just because they'd had a candidate come in there and buy up, but who sold a lot of memberships, correct?
Yes. This was just right after the Alliance became the Conservative Party, and the fellow who came in, Jasbir Chima, he was an anchor for
Channel M?
Yeah, Channel M. He came in, I don't know if he kind of like misread how popular Chuck was out here, but the whole episode raised a lot of stink in Surrey North, because people in Surrey had been growing increasingly fed up, if you will, about special interest groups coming in and you know, using their weight and their numbers to be able to secure a party's candidacy, particularly because a lot of the people who were voting at the nomination level were not allowed to vote in a general election because they weren't citizens.
What compelled you to write this book, Tom?
Well, it's a strong sense of obligation and a little bit of fear, I suppose, of not doing it, because a lot of people were really expecting it. I was very honored to do it, because what had happened was Chuck's wife Donna had phoned me at the newspaper when I was on deadline and asked me if I'd write Chuck's biography, and I asked her, "What, you mean a book?" And she says, "Yes." And I'd written a book before, a local history book, so I knew what that's asking of one's family. You know, it takes it. a book becomes kind of like an obsession, right? And you you spend a lot of time away from your family working on this thing. And so I said, I'd have to I'll talk with my wife about it. And she said that, well, you know, you got to do this because this is like a almost like a last wish from a dying, you know, dying friend. You know.
So Chuck had known that you were, that, well, I guess he'd asked you to?
Yeah. I phoned him right after. I'd spoken with my wife, and he said, oh, good. And he was happy, and I told him I'd be honored to write his biography. And he told me there wasn't a lot of time. Because the doctors had told him that he'd only had a few weeks to live, but... Donna had asked me actually to write the book 5 days before Chuck died. I was actually en route to their house on Saturday morning, on the day he died, to do an interview with him. I hadn't realized he just died minutes earlier.
Did you think when you agreed to do the book that it would have received the sort of attention that it has received in recent weeks?
Well. It's kind of bittersweet, Joe, in the way that there's lots of attention, of course, on this this insurance business and, you know, everything. But this is a two page book a two page passage story in a 300 page book, and I'm really hoping that people will, you know, read the book and get a sense of what Chuck was all about, as opposed to just what the sound bites have been about, you know, the whole insurance policy matter. I imagine that it would get some attention, but imagining it and experiencing it is are two different things, of course. Chuck's whole life, I think, was a life worth celebrating, and I find that his the way he conducted himself throughout his life to be very inspiring, and I hope people get a chance to kind of have a look at that as opposed to just the particular focus that's been in the news.
That's the one thing after reading the book and sort of learning more about him. I mean, we'd seen him in the media throughout prior to his entry into politics, and sort of knew, he was almost a household name throughout this area.
Uh-huh.
But getting to know some of the background, getting to know what was going on when he was so much in the public eye in those weeks when Parliament was you know, going through those confidence motions and so on, it really was. You became his friend almost. You were his friend, I should say.
Well, yeah, it was kind of, based on respect, Joe. He had a lot of, like I say, a lot of time for people. Very, very difficult not to like the fellow. I mean, the media loved him, he didn't really do anything that that could be construed as something that would bother anybody, you know. It was just a down to earth, straight shooting, straightforward, nice guy. A real, you know, a breath of fresh air. Hard not to like a guy like that.
Back to the. I mean, this is what people want to hear. Unfortunately, is about this insurance policy business.
Well, sure, I understand that. Yeah.
And about how this book came about. I'm interested in the attention that the book's gotten. Who might you speculate leaked the book?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, your guess would be as good as mine.
Was your publisher perhaps upset that the book had gotten leaked prior to publication? I mean, even though it's gotten a lot of attention, in the end, do you think it sort of worked against the book?
Well, you know, that's kind of a difficult one to speculate on. I know that the day that this happened, I was out at out on assignment as a reporter at the newspaper, and I got a phone call from somebody at work that my wife had phoned in a bit of a panic, and so I went back because the message was that the publisher was saying that you know, something's happened, and until the Monday. See, this is a Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I had until the Monday to do my final proof of the book, but then the publisher was saying, "Oh, this has got to go out the door at 9 a.m." And so I read over the book again that night after doing a bunch of media interviews, and I got my final proof done. It was like I got to bed at like 10 after 3 or something like that, and then the Toronto radio guys started phoning at like 3:30, 3:40. And from then on, it was just a blur of media interviews, just one after the other, all day. From then on, it was nuts. But as far as how they got that, the media got onto it. I don't know. The book was supposed to be released at the end of March, and I thought, you know, people would have a chance to read this, and then they probably read that part about the insurance policy, and I assume that it would probably come up in the House of Commons, but I just had no idea it would just like be so explosive as it was.
What made you, I guess, save that for the book and perhaps not break the story in now?
In the newspaper?
Yeah.
Well, Don and I had asked me to write the biography. Of course, you know what I do on my own time is my own time, right?
Right.
Donna had expected it to be for the biography and not for me to run willy-nilly, breaking it right then. Of course, I took into account that here you have, I mean, she's just grieving in fresh grief, grieving the loss of her husband, right? And you can only imagine what that would be like, compounded by this, you know, explosive media circus that we've seen as well. So, when you're working on a book, you tend to look at things differently. I'm looking at it as small parts of the whole. I'm working on all sorts of different angles on the book at the same time, of course, and you kind of get tunnel vision with that, eh? Like I say, the book's the obsession, you know?
Right.
You get so involved in it that you don't really pay much attention to what's happening on the outside, I guess. A book, which I learned, it's not like the media where you do an interview and then it gets out there. Getting somebody to, or even catching a publisher's attention to, in the hopes of getting a book published, is a very difficult thing in Canada. Seems.
So
it takes a long time to get a book done.
Indeed.
Published.
Indeed, yeah. Back to the meetings that Chuck Hedman took with party officials. There were this whole insurance business, the $1 million insurance policy, that came about from two party officials meeting Hedman. Stephen Harper, when he met Cadman, he had gone to meet Cadman in those weeks in question. He was not the person who brought the offer. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know what Stephen Harper and Chuck talked about in Chuck's at Chuck's house. I guess that would have been on April 1st of 2005, right?
I guess the other thing.
I'm just trying to think about in the book. No, he was one of many people that went and talked with Chuck. You know, I've no idea what the nature of that visit was.
Prime Minister Martin had also gone to see him as well, correct?
At his office.
At the home in Ottawa?
At the apartment in Ottawa, the apartment that Donna and Chuck had. Paul Martin and Eugene Bassange went to see them.
And there was...
excuse me.
On the part of the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Martin at the time, there was no offer made at that meeting of any consideration should he vote one way or another?
Of course, I wasn't there, right? But from what I've heard from Paul Martin, and from Donna herself, is that there was no offer made on behalf of the Liberals.
As an observer, politics, where do you think we're headed with an inquiry on this whole matter?
Oh goodness, yeah. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I'm just kind of watching this, going, what's going to happen next myself.
How has the Cadman family, Donna Cadman in particular, reacted to the book?
Well, she read the book before I submitted it to the publisher. Right? I mean, I did that courtesy to her. I wanted her to give her blessing, so to speak.
Do you find someone's asked this already?
Uh-huh.
But did you find it particularly ironic that perhaps she would say this, that the Conservatives had offered an insurance policy of $1 million,
mm-hmm.
at the same time while she was seeking, and she is, I guess, the Conservative Party nominee in Surrey North?
Oh, okay. Well, to give you a bit of background, she told me this in 2005, not long after Chuck had died, because he died in July, right? And then I spoke with Stephen Harper about it in September. She announced that she would be seeking the nomination for the Conservative Party a year after Chuck had died. I don't know what she told me at the time that she's kind of like, yeah, you know, Chuck, they had their issues, you know, with the Conservative Party, but she figured that to be a government, she would have more likelihood of getting legislation passed, or perhaps some of Chuck's orphaned bills passed, being a member of the governing party, as opposed to opposition or an independent or something. So you'd really have to ask her about her rationale there. After all this blew up, she put out a subsequent statement that I think you can find on her website about the insurance policy matter.
Covering the area and looking at politics in Surrey and Surrey North in particular,
mm-hmm.
what sort of candidate is Donna Cadman? Is there, besides, I guess, the influence of her late husband, what are her chances, I guess?
You know, I don't know. She's got a strong opponent in Patty Pretty, who's the NDP MP, both of them, they're friends. I think it'll be a clean contest. Who wins? I have no idea. But I've never professed to be able to really predict political contests well. I just sit back and see what happens, and the chips fall where they may, so to speak. If you're asking me to call this one, I have no idea.
There's an interesting story in the book, and I want to close on this, Tom, if I may. You mentioned Penny Pretty. What's the story about these beads that Chuck wore that supposedly had come from Penny Pretty, and I guess they'd also, it involved Dave Hayer's daughter?
His son, Alexander, who had leukemia. Yeah, these beads... I'm trying to recall the specific thing. I believe, I don't know if you have the book in front of you, I don't, but the beads were made by I think a girl who was suffering from cancer.
I believe so. Yes.
It's kind of like a hope chain or something.
Right.
Now each bead represented one treatment, I think, or chemotherapy treatment, and it became a very precious thing to Penny, and there's something that kind of made its rounds. It's just kind of like I don't know. It obviously meant an awful lot to Penny and Chuck and I assume to Dave and Alexander and their family as well. It was just kind of like a symbol of hope, I guess.
And so, I guess, of course, Miss Pretty, she had cancer.
Yeah.
And as you said, Dave Harris sent Alexander, he had cancer. Mm-hmm. And so they just passed this along to one another, and in your book you wrote that Chuck Cadman had cherished these beads and wore them on his neck, around his neck constantly.
Yes.
It does say something about, I guess, just how popular he was, that he crossed party lines and so on, and that he really was one of the more real people that we've had in public life in this area and in Parliament.
Right, yeah. He wasn't the kind of guy who would go make a bunch of noise and, you know, rattle the sabers and all that kind of thing. He was more of a quiet kind of guy who did an awful lot of work in the Justice Committee, you know, where they roll up their sleeves and get to the business of the finer points of legislation and proposed legislation. And he was really known for working hard at that. And he really kind of co-opted the system rather than railed against it, you know. He tried his best to improve legislation so other people wouldn't have to hopefully deal with the kind of things that his family had to deal with. I mean, it's amazing the amount of tragedy that his family had been through. But he became it's going to sound kind of silly, I suppose, but almost like the William Wallace of the victims' rights movement in the 1990s. He created a new template for victim rights.
This is, as I said, Tom, an interesting and compelling book. Congratulations on writing it, and I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about it today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Continued good luck with it, Tom.
Thanks a lot.
The book is called Like a Rock, the Chuck Cadman Story, from Harbor Publishing, $26.95 for the commentary. I'm Joseph Plunder.